And now, more tips with your host, Rebecca, on lifestyle improvement.
And remember that in our program, we present our opinion and the opinion of our guest, and is not to be interpreted as medical advice.
Welcome to our program, Lifestyle Improvement. Today, we have part two of our interview with Dr. Lisa Gaylor. Dr. Gaylor is faculty at the University of Virginia School of Nursing. She also has a PhD in psychology from UCLA, where she studied gut and liver interactions with the brain.
And gardening is an absolutely wonderful activity that caregivers can do with the people that they care for.
It's really true. I have a friend who is an occupational therapist who works in a rehabilitation facility, and they have gardens. And, you know, it's a wonderful thing to work with. People there enjoy, because it's something that, you know, you can sort of see, you know, you can just experience in the moment, I suppose. And, you know, for people who have dementia, that, you know, they live in the moment. And so to spend your time in the moment with them is good for you as well as for them.
That's a beautiful thing. And, you know, a definitely great way to address or deal with stress, instead of another way, which would be sometimes something like overeating, which may not be positive at all for you, and it can cause some problems. How can they ameliorate that?
Well, you know, one of the things about overeating, a lot of the time, reasons we do that is just because it's rewarding. You know, eating is a really important thing for us to do for our bodies. So anything that's important for our body is naturally wired to be rewarding. And a lot of times in our lives, we don't necessarily feel rewarded enough. A lot of what stress is about is like not feeling rewarded. I'm not getting enough out of this, you know, especially if you're a caregiver and you're spending all of your time on someone else's needs. You can feel like your needs aren't being met.
So true.
And so it's an easy thing to do is just to eat, because you can feel rewarded right now. The problem is overeating. Mm-hmm. And you know, that is a huge problem. I mean, and so I think I'll share with you how I've dealt with this issue, because, you know, as you, mm-hmm. you know, I had gained quite a bit of weight, and I knew from what I do, I knew that I needed to lose weight. And I was not really overeating. I was eating very healthy food, but I was eating too much, clearly, because I weigh too much. So I decided to take my own advice and try to deal with, because I know as someone who studied eating, I know that, you know, you have factors that are related to what your gut wants you, you know, increasing you wanting to eat right on early on when you first start eating. Your gut will tell you, you need to keep eating more. We're getting food. As you eat, continue to eat, you get satiety factors that tell you, okay, the gut says, all right, we've had enough. You can stop eating now. And these are the signals we often tend to blow right by. And the other type of factors are head factors. And these are the emotional factors. These are, you know, factors like how much you know you like the food, or even social factors of eating it with somebody, and the rewarding aspects of food. So when we're eating, it's important, if we want to be able to eat in a healthy way, we need to be able to satisfy the gut and eat the way the gut wants us to, enough and not too much, and be able to satisfy our emotional needs to make us feel rewarded enough after we've eaten. So what I did was, I decided to take a mindfulness approach. And so, as you may know, mindfulness is about being in the moment, experiencing what's happening in your body right now, what's right at this moment, what's happening in the outside world. So I decided that I would just, rather than shoveling food down my face, I would take a small bite and put it in my mouth and experience it. And just experience, what is it? What's the texture of this? If I'm eating more than one kind of thing in this bite, how do they work together? And I'm just really thinking about that and just sort of letting it kind of melt in my mouth a little. Chew it really good. If it's crunchy, really get into that crunch and then swallow it. And so that I really enjoy it, you know, and that's the key part is being able to really enjoy that. And that slowed me down so that it made it easier for my gut. And as an aside, I've suffered from irritable bowel syndrome since I was a teenager. And that just involves cramping and can be gas and things like that. Well, once I started listening to my gut, my irritable bowel syndrome is so much better, because I would just die. I guess I should have listened. The other nice thing, though, is I feel rewarded by my food much sooner. I do not have to eat quite so much food, because I'm feeling like, oh, I've had enough before I've eaten a whole giant two or three helpings. I mean, one helping is enough, which, you know, something that I really like. I would sometimes eat three helpings because I was really rewarded by this. And just doing that, then I would feel like I've had enough. I've had that feeling of being enough. And the other thing that I think is particularly important with this approach is that I've also felt just more rewarded generally in my life, because I feel like, well, you know, I've enjoyed that food and I really made a point of eating that food and I'm enjoying it and I'm letting myself enjoy it. You know, so if I'm going to eat, a chocolate brownie, now I don't have to eat a whole chocolate brownie, but I usually cut it in little pieces because I usually don't need that much, but I'm going to enjoy that exactly. chocolate brownie or my tiramisu. I'm going to eat that. I'm going to enjoy it.
So it becomes a sensory experience.
It does. It does. And in some ways, it's sort of a validating experience. You know, yeah, I deserve it. I'm worth it to enjoy this and not to just sort of furtively put it in. I really want this. I really want this, but I shouldn't have it. Well, what you shouldn't have is too much, but, you know, to have a little bit of anything. And so that way you can kind of, I guess you can use it as sort of a stress resilience kind of technique. I think you can eating healthy, which is good for your body. But, you know, by enjoying it, it also can be good for your mind.
Absolutely.
And you can enjoy that at moments, because I think especially if you're very busy and especially if you're busy in the way that caregivers mm-hmm. often are, you really aren't able to enjoy your life in this moment because you're having to think, having to look ahead and what's happening and what's going to happen. And you know, there's all these kinds of things that you just can't take a break out. That it can be stressful in itself.
Absolutely. And talking about that right now, what have you found in your research concerning caregiver stress and long-term effects of that?
Well, one of the things that we've noticed with chronic stress in caregivers is the effects on healing, the effects on the immune system. Mm. And so you have increased inflammation, which can cause health problems for the caregivers. And this can really be a serious problem. So healing, whenever you have any kind of injury or you have some kind of problem like that, the sooner you can heal, the better it is for your body. Mm-hmm. But the stress of caregiving can drastically slow down healing, and some things may not ever even resolve. So, you know, when we're talking with caregivers, we really like to try to encourage people to find some kind of way to get support if at all possible, take advantage of respite if possible, or family members if they can help. Sometimes that's not possible, but if you can have something that you can do for yourself, which may include eating.
But healthy and in little bites.
But, you know, allow people to help you if you can, mm-hmm. because it's so easy to sort of, well, I know stress is bad, but I know I need to take care of my partner right now. If you get on an airplane, if you've ever been on an airplane, you know, they always tell you when the oxygen mask drops down, put your mask on first.
Right.
So that you can help other people.
Exactly.
Really, that underlines you have to take care of your own self in order to be able to really be able to help the other people.
Exactly.
Easy to forget that.
It is easy to forget that. This is your host, Rebecca. And now we will take a short break, and we will be right back with more ideas on lifestyle improvement.
A unique and specialized approach to spinal care is what you will find in the Advanced Spinal Care Clinic in Graham, Washington. Here's Dr. Craig Lipinski explaining why Nuke Care is unlike any other treatment.
Our goal is that we're making a specialized correction to the skull, the atlas, and the neck of each individual that is custom made or custom and specific created to get them healthy and then have them stay that way.
One of only 23 board certified Nuke practitioners in the world, Dr. Craig Lipinski offers you care that can significantly impact your health in positive ways.
This week we've seen somebody in here who's had a 50-point drop in blood pressure by having the skull, atlas, and neck corrected to a proper position.
To find out more about how Nuka Care can change your life, visit www.nuccawashington.com or call 253-445-8181.
Really, that underlines you have to take care of your own self in order to be able to really be able to help the other people.
Exactly.
Easy to forget that.
It is easy to forget that, absolutely. Because, like you say, you're involved in the day-to-day and you're surviving sometimes, just surviving yourself.
Right.
So it is very easy to forget that. But it is so important to remember that you are being a caregiver today, but there are long-term effects, like you mentioned. And this stress really does challenge your immune system. And it does affect, like you've mentioned before, issues of inflammation, but also depression, correct?
Yes, absolutely. Well, depression is associated with inflammation. And, you know, just, you know, you can, if just having inflammation can induce depression. And that's really well established in animals and in people. Sickness is associated with that. Chronic stress is also associated with that. And there's kind of a sort of an unholy positive feedback loop where you have stress, which enhances inflammation. Inflammation dysregulates the nervous system's homeostasis and your mood. And you get more of these inflammatory little hormones that the immune system puts out. And those can cause the symptoms of depression. I just can't underline the importance of stress management and social support, especially, and trying to do something about, I mean, depression. One of the problems with depression is that, you know, a lot of times you don't realize you have it. The symptoms of depression can be sort of a fatigue or a loss of energy, a loss of not really finding meaning in life, anhedonia, which means not experiencing pleasure. A lot of these things we can associate with aging, or we can associate with just knowing that we're really super busy and not realizing that this is actually kind of turning into something that could be more chronic. It's something that needs to be addressed. I mean, pay attention to some of the symptoms if you start to feel that, you know, you're just not getting much pleasure out of things. Because one of the problems with depression is your brain sort of gets into a little bit of a rut. And so once you start feeling depressed, if it continues on, it can end up being more permanent. Mm-hmm. So it's normal to have feelings of ups and downs, or you may have a hard day and of course you feel depressed, and that's a normal thing to feel. But if it extends from days and days into weeks, then we're in a situation where something should be addressed in some way.
Correct. Absolutely. And especially if you're dealing with the depression, a lot of the elderly people are dealing already with depression. And so you're dealing with that. Plus, if you are also depressed, that really is not a recipe for success. That is a very challenging situation. So what are some of the changes to consider concerning gut health and diet that could be helpful for any of our caregivers and for our audience that would address some of the issues we've been talking about?
Well, one of the things we need to do is eat a really varied diet. You know, if you look on the internet, you'll see all sorts of fads, the five foods you should never eat, or, oh, you must eat this, or never eat that, or, you know, and then you can end up getting stressed worrying about all that.
Right.
But really, you just need to eat a variable diet. Colorful foods, because there's a lot of nutrients in those colorful foods, a lot of like antioxidants. One of the critical reasons why stress is so bad for us and inflammation is so bad for us is because the inflammation causes the release of what they call reactive oxygen species, and that causes oxidative damage. And so antioxidants can potentially limit that damage. So if you eat, and colorful foods tend to have like red peppers and citrus, and a lot of these have antioxidants in them. So this is one of the things that you can do is look for colorful foods and varied diet.
I had just read something a couple of days ago that a Mediterranean diet, because of the olive oil, was actually a really good diet to think about to preserve brain function.
Yes, yes. It's probably the olive oil. It has to be really good olive oil. You may not know that there's a lot of counterfeit olive oil out there, but olive oil is really good. It's also important to look at the holistic way in which the Mediterranean diet works. They eat a lot of colorful food. They also saute a lot of their foods or have a little oil in there. And that seems to help get little nutrients across their gut barrier. So they eat varied foods, fresh foods. They also do it in the context of friends and family. So eating is, they eat more slowly. If you've ever been to some place like Italy or France, I mean, it's a big deal. You all get together with your friends and you drink wine, red wine, which also we know has antioxidants and things like that in it. And you're all talking and you're having the food and it's all really great. And so I think it's been very hard to try to just pin down one thing. You know, you really need to look at the whole, include, you know, the olive oil, the types of foods that people eat there, as well as the sort of social environment that we eat our food in as well, that is protective.
That's fantastic. So like you're saying, a diet that is varied and that has a little bit of everything that will feed the different parts of our body.
Right, exactly. And it gives us more different types of gut bugs, for one thing. And also, but many of the little micronutrients that you hear about in the superfoods, they probably work synergistically, which means that they, you know, their actions are more than just their actions of each one of them together.
Any foods we should stay away from?
Well, I don't want to be on the anti-GMO bandwagon. Mm-hmm. However, there are some reasons to avoid genetically modified foods. For most of us, that involves refined grains. And the reason for that is the reason those grains, they've been refined so that they can tolerate more pesticides, so glyphosate. And they spray them a lot with glyphosate. And so they genetically modified them so they can handle those things can handle it. The problem is, whereas so far, they have not been able to demonstrate that glyphosate is bad for us. That's just because of some experimental reasons. I mean, nobody wants to be in a study with it where they get different doses of toxins.
It's true.
So it's important to realize when people say there's no evidence that it's bad, there's a reason for that. But where I see a big problem is we do know that glyphosates are bad for gut bugs, for bacteria. So it's complicated. So glyphosates seem to increase the growth of some bacteria and reduce or kill off other bacteria. So what you end up is inducing the dysbiosis, the imbalance in our gut microbes, potentially, by eating things that have glyphosates in them. And so, you know, right now, because so much of our refined grains are GMO. I mean, most of them are. And so it's a little bit hard to avoid that, you know. But if you can, and the extent that you can, I'm trying to do that now myself.
Right.
I'm really trying to avoid those things, because we know I don't want to induce dysbiosis any more than I already probably have.
And tell the audience again what dysbiosis means.
So dysbiosis is just our word for when our the populations of gut bugs, the different species, are not in balance.
Mm-hmm.
So we may have the same number, but typically there's not as many different ones.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, a healthy person has about 1,500 different species.
Wow.
And there's about 10,000 possible species.
Mm-hmm.
So we each have our own little, you know,
world.
It's a world down there. And, you know, I kind of think of it as a little bit like a playground. Because if you've ever been a playground monitor, if you've been on a playground or been a kid on a playground, you know that there's lots of little dramas that go on.
Right.
And, you know, some kids are really good and they always mind and they're always helpful to other kids.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some other kids who you know, if you're not looking, they're going to break the rules and they may be bullies or they may be. But, you know, if you have playground monitors or you have the principal there, you know, you may have some of these ones who are acting out sometimes may be really good.
Right.
They may be leaders. They may be really creative.
Exactly.
But they all have to be, everybody has to be there to make sure that everyone is playing nice, shall
right.
we say.
Right.
And I think that's sort of what's going on in our gut. So that you have to have, you know, if you have dysbiosis, you may be missing some of the playground monitors.
Wow, that's interesting.
And some of the sort of the ones who they're perfect. They're, you know, when they're in their balance, they're doing good things for us. But when they're not in their balance and they don't have the playground monitor, they're telling them, keeping them in line, they can cause inflammation. They can be doing some of these other things that aren't so good. So that's what dysbiosis is, when they're not in balance.
Uh-huh. Thank you. And so aware, and we have to be so aware of that, like you said, through the foods that we're eating. And, you know, we've had the pleasure in the past to talk to Dr. De La Monte, the doctor that came up with the concept of Alzheimer's being a type 3 diabetes. And I wanted to just kind of know, since you are the gut expert, to just tell us, you know, what you think a change of diet would do concerning that.
So one of the things that you want to make sure is that you don't have too much refined sugar. And you want to be sure that your insulin levels and all your counter-regulatory hormones are in balance. And so you would want to avoid the refined sugars, especially, and the refined other carbohydrates. So, you know, instead of eating white flour, eating whole wheat, because that slows digestion down. It also has the advantage of gut bugs like that. And so that can help keep inflammation under control, because as you may know, diabetes, in addition to being, you know, a dysregulation of our metabolic endocrine system, is also inflammatory, as is Alzheimer's. And that's probably, you know, part of the pathophysiology for all three of those types of conditions is inflammation. So things that you can do to reduce inflammation, control inflammation, are important. So again, eating things that we know are anti-inflammatory, tend to be anti-inflammatory. Olive oil seems to, by ways that we don't totally understand, there are some pieces to the puzzle, but we don't totally understand it. But olive oil does seem to sort of shift the balance in the immune system, to a regulatory or anti-inflammatory status as opposed to pro-inflammatory. There are a number of other things, especially this colorful food. Colorful foods, that's one of the things they tend to do. So blueberries are really good for this. And there was a study showing that blueberries and a number of other colorful foods, people who are at risk for type 2 diabetes, who had it in the family, and I think maybe were a little overweight, if they ate lots of blueberries and these things, wow, they did not develop the type 2 diabetes. So it seems to be really, you know, interesting. It's a correlative study, but it's interesting showing that your diet really can affect whether or not you develop a disease that you are genetically susceptible for. It can be one of the kinds of things that we can do to protect ourselves.
Wow, that makes a lot of sense. And you've convinced me about why I should consider probiotics every day. Now, you want to tell the audience why they should think about this?
Oh, yeah. Well, the probiotic bacteria that we have, especially in the... If you can do dairy, I really recommend the yogurts, like the Greek yogurts especially. They have some nice, robust live species of lactobacillus. Lactobacillus seems to be one of the playground monitors of the gut.
Oh.
It seems like whenever you look at people who have a chronic illness and you look at what bugs they seem to be missing when they have dysbiosis, they seem to be missing lactobacillus. And so probiotics will all have lactobacillus. So some will have more than others. And since, you know, for most of us, you know, most everybody's been on antibiotics. Most of us have had antibiotics more than once. We probably bounced back, but not totally. Most of us have not eaten the most perfect diet in the world either. And we may have encouraged some other species. As we get older, our bodies change. And that may also affect things about who our gut bugs are. And so I encourage probiotics because they can help sort of reconstitute some of the species that we might have lost, because a lot of these probiotics are the ones that tend to be susceptible to things like antibiotics use.
That makes a lot of sense. And, you know, I just think it's so important, the information you've given us today, because these are things that, like you said, the gut is telling us stuff. The gut is telling something to our brain. And sometimes we just don't know how to interpret that.
Exactly.
So by having this information can make us at least take a moment to pause and think about it a little bit more, correct?
Exactly. Exactly. That's a wonderful way of putting that.
And then you also have a way that people can learn more about this through your blog.
Yes.
And your blog is new? You just started it not too long ago?
I just started it. So I only have a couple of things up. My blog is called Evidence-Based Wellness. And so it's evidence with a dash, based with a dash, wellness.com at WordPress. And I started my blog because I've talked to a lot of people who have some of these questions. And then when I would get on the internet, I was sometimes I just laughed, you know, ha ha, this is hilarious. But sometimes I was appalled because some of the information that is on the internet is wrong and could be dangerous. And so I thought, well, you know, it would be nice to have at least one source of information for people that, number one, isn't too stuffy, that's evidence-based. That's why I call it evidence-based wellness. It's evidence-based, but that isn't like too formulaic. Like there are like the Mayo Clinic and some of those people have things on the web, but they're not interactive. You can't just go, I read this and I'm going to ask a question. Well, I've got this symptom or I've got that, you know, you can't do that. So the nice thing about a blog is people can post comments, they can ask questions. And so I'm focusing on all the things I'm interested in, which include gut health, stress. Mm-hmm. So I already have one about leaky gut. Is leaky gut a thing? And it is. We didn't talk about that too much, but it is a thing. And stress. And I'll be talking about the mindful eating. It's going to be my next blog. And I also put recipes up for colorful food.
Oh, nice. I'll be looking at those.
Exactly. Easy ways to include some of these. Because I like to do things easy. And I like to make it enjoyable, right?
Yes.
Be tasty. And so my friends have given me recipes too. So I'm putting those up there. And I love to hear from people what they think or questions that people have. I learned so much. Because, you know, doing research, we only find out what questions we ask. We don't always know what questions we should be asking. And
exactly.
So when you find out what people are experiencing, you can just learn so much.
That's perfect. That makes so much sense. That is true. And that is when you make the research applicable, correct?
Exactly. Well, this is the critical thing, because for many researchers don't really know what the most important questions are for people. And that's right. One of the problems that we've had. So it's very important for us all to be talking to each other and right. getting all this information out.
Absolutely. Fantastic. That's totally true. So evidencebasedwellness.com. And if you Google it and you put Lisa Gehler, and that is G-O-E-H-L-E-R, correct?
Exactly.
Then you will be able to find her, and you can then join her blog and get so much more information, because today we just scratched the surface. You have publications, awards, and book chapters that are so extensive that it would take me 5 pages and 3 hours to share with the audience. So there they can go and read it themselves. But I just want to say thank you so much, Dr. Gehler. It's been a pleasure to talk to you. And I really mean that. I would love it if you came back and talked to us a little bit more sometime soon.
I would love to. Absolutely. Also, by the way, I have a Facebook page.
Oh, please tell us.
That's easier to get than Google.
So what do you do for the Facebook page?
If you, for that, it's just you, you do evidence-based wellness Facebook.
Okay. Okay, and that's easier. Yeah, that would be way easier.
And
okay.
It has a link to the blog, too. So I find it's the easiest way to do it, unfortunately. We're working on getting it a little bit more accessible. But,
awesome.
But I would love to hear from people. I would absolutely love to hear from people.
Great. So go ahead and join her Facebook and come visit her. And if you need more information about her as well, make sure to send us an email here at Lifestyle Improvement Radio, and we will direct you that way. Thank you so much, Dr. Gehler, and
we'll see you soon.
And remember that in our program, we present our opinion and the opinion of our guest, and it's not to be interpreted as medical advice.
Thank you for joining us today here on Lifestyle Improvement. And don't forget to tune in again next Sunday morning at 7:30 for more tips on lifestyle improvement.